Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our first guest is Cheryl Bartlett, the CEO of the ELOSA Foundation and former Massachusetts Commissioner of the Department of Mental Health. Cheryl, welcome to the
public
program.
Public health.
Public health, excuse me. I got it right in the notes, and I had it wrong on the thing. Okay, very well. I'll have to fix that. Thank you for being a guest on the show, and wanted to really start out. Tell us a little bit about your background, your bio, and then get into some of the good work that you've been doing over the years.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Josh, for having me on. I always love to have an opportunity to talk about my career because I've had a lot of opportunities to really implement some public health programs that are important for people to know about. So I started my career as a nurse. I trained at Yale New Haven Hospital and was a cardiac intensive care unit nurse there for some time and decided to take an adventurous summer off and go to Nantucket Island and be a summer nurse there. Went with a cardiology friend of mine, and we were summer nurse and summer doctor at the Nantucket Cottage Hospital, and kind of fell in love with Nantucket and never really left until 2008. I worked at the Nantucket Cottage Hospital and a wide variety of clinical nursing positions, from being the infection control nurse to running a dialysis unit, ER, ICU, OR, everything. Taught me an awful lot about being a nurse, which I think ultimately made me a pretty good commissioner of health because I saw healthcare from every kind of perspective. I ended my career there as the director of clinical services, overseeing everything from rehab, social services, home care, nursing, radiology, and moved on from the hospital when the AIDS epidemic hit and realized that we needed to have a community-type response to it. It was really a public health issue. Their life expectancy was quite short, and it was a really growing epidemic. And I founded the Nantucket AIDS Network to take care of people with AIDS. I became a nurse case manager, did home hospice for people. I bought a house so they could live in it and be cared for. Did some Lyme disease research. From there, I moved on to be the executive director of the Community Action Committee for the Cape and Islands, where it's an anti-poverty agency addressing some of the social determinants of health. It's really, again, I think, fleshed out my public health experiences on the ground, learning about what the conditions in people's lives are that really ultimately influence their health. And so looking at educational opportunity, job and career training, and child care and transportation are some of the big issues that prevent families from being self-sufficient and economically stable. And at the same time I was there, I got very involved in homelessness and had done some part-time consulting to the Plymouth Area Coalition for the Homeless and really got to understand family homelessness and some of the public health issues around that, like domestic violence and substance abuse. And then I had the great opportunity in 2008 when John Auerbach was Commissioner of Health to go to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health as the Chronic Disease Director. And I became the Director of the Bureau of Community Health and Prevention from there. And then I became the Deputy Commissioner and the Commissioner all in about a almost 7-year time period. So left there in 2014 and went back to Cape Cod, which is where my personal roots and home roots are, and helped them to develop a regional substance abuse action plan. And now I'm at ELOSA Health here in Boston working on evidence-based medicine and developing clinical guidelines and trainings for doctors and primary care providers around the best practice to manage many chronic diseases with a particular focus on medication management and making sure that people know the different effectiveness and safety issues and costs related to the medications that we prescribe. So that's where I am today. Do a lot of volunteer work still around the opioid epidemic, helping communities to come together and find solutions that they can implement and try to make an impact. I'm on the board of the Massachusetts Organization for Addiction and Recovery, as well as Learn to Cope, which is a peer and parent support group. Mm-hmm. And most recently joined the Massachusetts Children's Alliance, which helps children advocacy centers help our young kids who have been sexually assaulted. So that's kind of my career.
Wow.
I have a lot of different interests, and I love the work I've done over the years.
I noticed reading the website for the Alosa Foundation, it has a unique name, and it was, and you, I have you share that with us, and a little bit about, now you're not affiliated with pharmaceuticals, you're, in fact, you're very much distant from them. You're looking, when you're looking at best practices for primary care physicians, as I understood it, you're looking at evidence-based documentation, and I know you have an affiliation with Harvard Medical School. Tell us a little bit about the origin of the name of the foundation and some of the work that you folks are doing.
Absolutely, thanks. Well, our founder, Dr. Jerry Avorn, came up with the idea of academic detailing. He's the division director for Brigham and Women's Hospital and also Harvard Medical School, Division of Pharmacoepidemiology and Pharmacoeconomics, and they do the comparative research on efficacy, safety, and cost of medications, and I think over time they're also all practicing doctors within his division, so they bring a real-life knowledge and experience. And I think there was some recognition by them that they learned often how to prescribe medication from the pharmaceutical industry. And so this idea of academic detailing, which is what Alosa Health does, is to put these clinical practice guidelines together to educate physicians about the cost and safety of medication, hoping to improve the quality of care and reduce sort of the overprescribing phenomena that's happening in the United States.
Okay, and the...
And so the name of Alosa came about because we're, in essence, swimming against the tide, right? There's a lot of marketing that goes directly to consumers that never was allowed legally. When I was first a nurse, there was no direct-to-consumer marketing of medications, and now there is today, and we're a very consumer-oriented society, so we all want medications. So Alosa stands for a fish that's swimming upstream. So in essence, we're going against what the normal tide and flow is, trying to make an impact on health outcomes and the sometimes over-prescribing of medication. So Alosa is a genus of fish that swims upstream.
Well, that's great. And it's interesting that that's the title and that's the approach. Years ago, I had a Arnold Career Services. I was a headhunter, and I was working with a gentleman, I want to say out of New York, you know what they call a splits network, and he was looking for salespeople, pharmaceutical salespeople. And I was taken back when he said, if you know, for the really big cities, we want women who are good-looking. And,
yeah.
And he said, if you find a guy, I don't care how good he is, he's going to get buffalo. And that's the way, the pharmaceutical industry works, or worked that anyway. So
right.
the notion of swimming upstream, I get it, and I'm curious to know how receptive are physicians, primary care physicians, at the evidence-based approach to medicine and medical practices?
I think once you get through the door, it's really well received. It's sometimes getting through the door because we use the same approach as the pharmaceutical sales rep would do, which is calling you up and saying we want to talk to you and talk about managing a particular disease, diabetes, and they're very suspect. I would say the one thing is the medical community is a little bit wary about the old practices of the pharmaceutical industry. So we have to convince them that we are non-commercial, unbiased, there with evidence-based, often being paid for by a government agency that wants to improve the care in a particular area or with a particular condition. And then once they recognize that and we have a visit and they see the value of the information that we both talk to them about and leave with them, they really see this as a great service to themselves, because they say in primary care that if a doctor were to read all of what's new and trending about all the different conditions that people come to their offices for, they have to read something like 17 journal articles in a week, and we know how busy doctors aren't practicing. They only have 15 minutes with a patient, and they've got a lot of administrative work to support the clinical care that they give. And so to be able to synthesize all the different randomized controlled trials into one document for them and then summarize that yet even more into simple algorithms that we can walk through to help them understand what the new research is showing about particular conditions. And so in Pennsylvania, for example, where we have a big footprint, we are really, they look forward to us. We see about 800 doctors about three times a year, and we update all of our materials every 3 years so that we are providing the latest information. So, well received. Not a lot of definitive resources that are allocated for that, and we're really trying to figure out where some of the funding could come so we could really scale this up bigger in different states and across more territory in the states we're in.
And what states are you in presently?
So right now we're doing some work in Pennsylvania, in Washington, D.C., in Tennessee. We have some work we do in Maine. We just finished up a project here in Massachusetts and one last year in Vermont. We also have a big project with the Veterans Administration where they actually have started a national center for academic detailing, primarily to address the opioid overprescribing that they were seeing across the VA, particularly with our wounded veterans. And so now they really have a full-scale ability to do academic detailing. And that, to me, is the ideal approach, is if a system recognized how this could improve their clinical practices, their health outcomes of the patients they care for, as well as reducing or saving costs by some of the reduction in overprescribing that we have been able to track over the years. We think that that is the ideal way to do academic detailing, and what we would then do is provide them with the updated clinical content, training of their staff in this, a model of education, and then helping them to monitor their improvements.
The traditional approach in terms of medicine for primary care physicians would be to read the journal articles and so forth, as you said, up to 17 a week or something, if they really had the capacity and time to do that. And a lot of those are obviously influenced by pharmaceutical companies or profit-making organizations. Yours, the foundation, the Alosa Foundation, is a nonprofit foundation, as I understand it?
Correct, and we take no money from the industry.
And that's so that's important because
of either from government or health system.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. That's important to be unbiased. I'm thinking this through. The information that your group or the research has come up with is when you say evidence-based, it draws from what's working and what's not working, as well as what some people have run into. It's side effects.
What we do when putting our clinical materials and guidelines together is to search the literature for all of the randomized controlled trials since the last time this particular condition was reviewed and guidelines were developed. So it's all based on trials that were done that are unbiased, that sometimes are blinded studies, so that we actually see and have enough volume of participants in the study so that you can really say the outcomes are validated and generalizable to the entire population. You know, we look at the methodology and is it really a true scientific process? So all of our clinical team are scientific researchers, so they understand the methodology. They actually read all the studies themselves. And we have three clinical advisors that are all Harvard Medical School professors. They practice medicine and they do research with Dr. Avorn and his Division of Pharmacoepidemiology. And so they come together and they discuss all the evidence that's out there and have quite the debate amongst themselves, and then they talk about how does that really, you know, relate to actual practice and the experiences they have as primary care physicians. So it's really quite a process that we go through that's quite academic and unbiased and strong research and science protocols that we come to the assessment of what the best outcomes that we can really relate to the person.
And if you were to describe what the benefits are of academic detailing, what would you say those are?
I would say that it gives information to a doctor in a clinically relevant and interactive way, and so that it's been demonstrated that that type of learning helps people to change their practice behaviors better than giving them a piece of paper that outlines the protocol, or that you go to, let's say, an 8-hour conference on a particular subject matter. They say that people go back and don't actually change their behavior. So the pharmaceutical industry has clearly learned how to influence the behavior of the prescriber to their advantage. So using that same model allows us to influence the practice behavior to an evidence-based approach.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and certainly a very interesting subject matter, and appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule to be one of our guests.
Well, thanks so much, Josh. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about Alosa Health and the great work we do.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care now.
Have a great day.
Yeah, bye-bye.